Is it sometimes a little hard to see through the smoke? Do fire service, rescue, and EMS issues work you up just a bit? Maybe more than just a bit? If they don't, check your pulse. It's normal for firefighters and responders to get worked up over hot issues when you love the job so much. Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, Firehouse.com commentator and Firehouse Magazine columnist, hosts Through the Smoke, an internet broadcast and podcast that addresses issues impacting all firefighters, such as safety, health, and morale. Don't ignore the issues and maintain the status quo. Take an interest in issues that impact you, the frontline responder. Join Billy, special guests, and firefighters around the country and the world regularly on Through the Smoke, only on Firehouse.com.
Hey, we're back. This is Radio at Firehouse.com. Through the Smoke is the show. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. Had a lot of great response to our last show regarding the rule of air management, so we've asked Mike Galliano from ManagerAir.com from Seattle to come back and chat a little bit about us about this with us and provide more information on managing your air. Again, Mike is representing his partners Phil Jose, Casey Phillips, Steve Bernocco, and that bunch. But Mike is probably the most familiar with the English language of the four of them, so we're going to let Mike do the talking. Is that accurate, Mike? Is that what you told me to say? Yeah, okay, good. Never mind. Beep that out.
I can
out.
Grunt
anyway.
With the best of them.
Well, managing your air, you know, I'll tell you, we all learned something when we talked to you last week, and it was great. Such simple stuff you talked about. And this week what we're going to do is you're going to cover a couple more subjects, and those subjects are 30-minute bottles, how firefighters die in structures, the cyanide and smoke issue, cancer and the cancer presumptions, and I'm going to talk a little bit about cancer. I already mentioned something in my news earlier, and we need to talk about that because personally, more and more firefighters I know are being diagnosed. Some very good friends of mine, and I've lost some very dear friends in the last year or so. We're going to talk about the buddy system, and then we're going to end with Seattle's policy, of which there is a link at the bottom of the show, right on your page there, where you can click and get a copy of Seattle's policy. So, Mike, welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Glad to be here once again.
Yeah, it's good to have you. And, again, the rule of air management, the new basic skill in firefighter safety, survival, and fire ground excellence. Know how much air you have and manage that air so you leave the hazard area before your low air warning alarm activates. That's a whole new different way of thinking for a lot of us. Most of us would go to work, and when the bell rang, we'd say, give us a few more seconds, and then bail out at the last minute, and we're finding that's just dumb. It's not the way to be operating. And across the nation, firefighters are, because of your efforts, along with Phil, Casey, and Steve, and many other great fire instructors who are pushing the issue as well, are waking up to the reality that we can no longer treat our air as an afterthought. Numerous line-of-duty deaths, serious injuries, and close calls are a grim reminder that running out of air in a hazard area is a risk that cannot be taken. And I think what you said last week really also hit to a lot of us. You don't see divers in the ocean operating like this, so why are we operating like that? So let's talk about your concerns about the attitudes of firefighters and their 30-minute bottles.
Well, the 30-minute bottle is the staple of SCBAs. That's pretty much what most of us have used from the onset of the introduction of the SCBA and the fire service. And right off the bat, just like the majority of the things we do with our air management practices, we start off on bad footing. We call that thing a 30-minute bottle. That's correct, right? That's how you know yours and your fire department? Is that right, Billy?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, 30-minute bottle. That's what everybody says. And then we move to
30-minute bottle. And actually, the attitude is, I got a 30-minute bottle, only lasts 20 minutes. I mean, that's kind of the attitude I think you hear from everybody.
Right. You see, so it's interesting because right off the bat, we know we've got something we call a 30-minute bottle or a 45-minute bottle. And any firefighter who's worth their salt, who's drilled on them or been to a fire or two, knows that in no way, shape, or form is a 30-minute bottle. In fact, there are lawsuits pending right now that are addressing that exact issue with the manufacturer. You sent us what was described as a 30-minute bottle. Well, my now dead firefighter husband or son or brother.
St. Louis, right? Was St. Louis involved in it?
Memphis. is
Memphis,
probably the,
yeah,
one of the
there's a couple
yeah,
of them out there.
Ones. Oh yeah, and just the tip of the iceberg. As we discussed last time, chief officers, folks who are running fire departments, you might as well just be ready to put on the Class A's and go to these lawsuits because they're coming, and rightfully so on the part of the family. Those are not 30-minute bottles, and they never were 30-minute bottles. The interesting point is, so how do we get to a 30-minute bottle? How did it get that designation? It didn't just get pulled out of thin air. And once again, like all our other air management practices, it started on an erroneous notion. They strapped those bottles onto, at the time, was somebody they figured was doing a good, hard amount of work, and that's how they came up with the rating. The problem is, they didn't strap them on firefighters. They didn't put them on a firefighter who was in doing the things that we do in superheated conditions where there's a tremendous amount of exertion and stress. The manufacturer for the MSA, we asked them how they came up with their ratings, and they said that way back in the day, maybe back when you started, Billy, way back in the day.
That hurts.
Who do you think they strapped them onto to get the rating?
The horses that I used to ride on.
Yeah, that sounds about right. No, they strapped them onto gravediggers, somebody who was doing a steady amount of work. This was when they were still digging with shovels and digging the graves manually.
Wow.
And that's how they initially got the rating. And here's the problem with that. When they did those, the gravedigger was doing their thing, not typical firefighter work, that's for sure, and certainly not in any kind of hazardous conditions.
Right.
And they ended up with about a 40 liter per minute. That's about what they use. So
okay.
They anticipated between 40 to 60, but 40 seems to be pretty consistently what they use to make these ratings. That's how we got a 30-minute bottle. Here's the problem. Here's why those ratings are inaccurate, and every single firefighter on the fire ground knows they're inaccurate, but we still call them that. Firefighters are using, on a good rock and fire where you're actually doing what we do, they're using anywhere between 100 to 120 liters per minute. So now you understand why that 30-minute bottle in no way, shape, or form is going to get you in there for a half hour. Most folks are thinking 20 minutes, 15 to 20 seems to be
sure.
About what we get. I know a lot of folks that 15 to 20 minutes in a 30-minute bottle, that's wishful thinking. That's that's
right. Oh,
really,
yeah.
That's a really, really good day.
Yeah.
And so you extrapolate that out over all the different things that we have to do, all the different things that we face, and you throw in there the key component of the rule of air management, which is not only knowing what you have and managing the air as you go, but that you exit with the emergency reserve intact. That time of air when the low air warning alarm hits, that last 25%, no matter what size bottle you have, you put that last 25%, depending on how much you use, it's 3 minutes, 5 minutes, for some folks
right.
It's 1 minute, you start violating that emergency reserve because you're used to thinking that you have a 30-minute bottle. Now you've eliminated any chance that you're going to have air to get out of the structure.
Well, you know, I talked to one firefighter following the last show. We were emailing back and forth, and we chatted, and his, not argument, I guess, but his concerns were, but I could get a lot more work done if I just use it right till the bell rings. And what I tried to explain to him is, yeah, as long as nothing else goes wrong. And that's the problem. Every close call we take a look at in the magazine or on my website or any of the stuff we do, it came out of nowhere. We didn't know this was going to happen. Well, a lot of times it's predictable. And if you're operating in a building fire, knowing that part of a wall could come down or you could get trapped is predictable. We're in hazardous atmospheres. So why wouldn't you want to have that extra amount of air? And if you walk outside with that extra air, it's all that much better. But if you get caught and you've wasted time playing around inside where you should have gotten out and saved that air, you're screwed.
Like I mentioned in the last program, we're on the prevention side of things. I think it's awesome to hear with the rescue systems that they've got now a very articulate and very committed advocate in Jeff Cool to get these things
right.
In place. What we should really be focusing on, in addition to getting the equipment in there for when things do go bad, is really working hard to keep us from being put in the position to ever have to go out a window, to ever have to put those ropes into use.
Right.
That's what the rule of air management, and that's what good air management techniques is really seeking to impact.
That's kind of what you're saying, right, Mike?
We want to be on the front end of it.
Not have to use that last bit of air, right?
Exactly right. If we never had to use a personal rescue rope, if we never had to activate another RIT, that would be the win-win, awesome for everybody. we're still going to trend in those things because you cannot account for everything. You can do the best air management in the world and still end up on the short end of a run where you're going to need
right.
extra help, whether it be having to go out a window or having to have somebody come in to help you. If you don't have a personal rescue rope, just like was demonstrated on Black Sunday, you have one option. If you're going out the window, you're jumping. You're going
right.
out. You don't have another option. If you run out of air inside of an IDLH atmosphere, your options now diminish. Usually there's a couple, not always. Sometimes you're down to one. Sometimes for some folks it's down to none.
Right.
You got to get out of there however you can, whether that's diving out the window, going through the fire, whatever way you can get out. The other option is to hunker down, call for a RIT team, try to get some type of folks to come in and help you out. Fortunately, the cultural change that's happening within the fire service, and we applaud this change on behalf of firefighters, is people are calling for maydays and for help coming in a lot quicker than we ever would have, say, 3-5 years ago. We're listening to the radio reports. I don't know how many of you have heard the radio reports from the Black Sunday incident. They're absolutely horrifying. I mean, to listen to the trauma of the folks on
oh,
the
absolutely.
Outside.
Oh,
yep. It's just horrifying. I wish everyone could listen to it. So for once and for all, for chief officers, for company officers who have responsibility for the lives of their firefighters, would come to the realization that we're not just cutting out paper dolls here, that this is real. These are firefighters' lives that are being put in place by stupid policy that should be eliminated. And
traditions.
And tradition, sure. And, you know,
yeah.
we're like I said last time, we believe so strongly in the culture of the fire service. I mean, we really do. I believe it's our strength. What we have to do is look at changing behaviors of how we think about our air, how we think about how we're managing our air. And I would respectfully submit we've got to put a higher importance on our firefighters. Our chief officers and company officers have got to look at the firefighters in their departments and look at the firefighters in their company and say, you flat out are more important to me than another 2 to 3 minutes of pulling ceilings or another 2 to 3 minutes of trying to find a fire that we haven't found yet. You're more important, and that emergency reserve is sacred. You will not violate it. The expectation is that you will hit that door with the emergency reserve with it intact. And should something go wrong, you still have that emergency reserve for me to get up my well-trained RIT team in to come in and rescue you. That's the change we want to see.
There's a lot, definitely in the last 10 years, we're seeing more cultural change in the fire service, I think, than we've probably seen in the last 50 years. And there's definitely more of a focus of taking care of ourselves and getting everybody home and what have you. How we die in structure fires, Mike, you want to talk about that a little bit, and that's a wide open discussion because there's so many ways. I'm a big advocate of pushing the issue of playing. We love to play. Fire's knocked down, the building's unstable. Let's stick around in here a little bit more. It's been a while since we had a good job, things like that. And playing gets us in trouble. And I personally use a number of case studies where it shows firefighters playing during overhaul, things like that. But specifically, when you talk about how firefighters die in structures, what are your biggest concerns?
Well, I think you probably agree that firefighters are innovative and problem solvers, and I was doing up a little article the other day and wrote down in one of the pieces that firefighters are absolutely at their best when all of a sudden the way that they were going to do something has been stopped, and now they have
right.
to get creative and come up with another solution. I mean, we're creative
That's
problem solvers. The interesting thing about how we're dying in structure fires is it's basically the same ways. Since Benjamin Franklin started our fire service in the States, you look back to line of duty deaths, going back to the beginning, we're dying in the same ways in structure fires. It's due to smoke, it's due to thermal insult, we're dying because of burns, structural collapse, firefighters getting lost, and then of most significance, it's running out of air. We're trying to do things about all those other ways of dying in fires. We're trying to do something about the smoke with just having SCBAs, having the masks on. We're doing something about burns with better bunking gear and trying to in some way get ourselves encapsulated with, for example, hoods, which I think are pretty much standard for firefighters across the country now.
Right.
Structural collapse, I think most fire departments have pretty good building construction classes now, or are at least trying to get firefighters up to snuff on how this building is going to fail, how it's going to drop on us and collapse, and ways that we can at least recognize it and recognize when the thing's lost and there's no sense to put firefighters at risk for something that's lost. Same thing with getting lost. We're doing our best to train to be oriented in a building. And the biggest thing to come down the pipe that I think is fantastic is just oriented search. I mean, if teams would commit to oriented search, we wouldn't lose as many firefighters as we do getting lost just doing silly rescues. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of focus on that stuff. You know, Jeff mentioned something earlier when we talked to him. He ran into a firefighter in Baltimore that had no idea about his incident. And those of you listening to this show, those of you that read the magazines, are up and in tune with the issues and what Mike just mentioned, all these improvements we're making, is true to firefighters who are engaged. There are so many firefighters that are not engaged, and that's a whole other issue, but we definitely are making progress. And, you know, Mike, you also mentioned, and I'm going to let you go on to the air issue in a minute, running out of air, but when you say firefighters are dying in the same ways, and I hear people say that, what it makes me think of is NIOSH reports. Now, for years we've heard firefighters say, oh, the NIOSH reports are all the same. Well, it's because we keep dying the same way. I mean, how many different ways can you get struck on the highway? How many times, you know, how many different ways can you go in a building and your air runs out and you die? So I will tell you, in the last couple of years, the NIOSH reports are a heck of a lot more informative, lots more detail in those, and you can really learn a lot more than years ago. But as Mike just said, I mean, you really hit a good point. There's nothing new other than terrorism and 9/11, and certainly we put that in a separate category. But the day-to-day runs we're going to, we're not dying in any new ways. So you're getting ready to talk about managing the air now, tying into that same philosophy.
Well, in the fifth of the primary ways that firefighters are dying in structures is running out of air. And there was a pretty decent study done it's a fire academy study over 10 years from 90 to 2000. 63% of non-cardiac related deaths had to do with running out of air inside of structures. That number might be higher. We're going to talk a little bit more down the road about cyanide exposure. These were non-cardiac deaths. There may have been some cardiac deaths that were in there that were certainly related to hydrogen cyanide. So, you know, all that to say, we're dying in the same ways. We're addressing many of the ways, or at least we're making an effort to. We're not addressing in a real substantive way in the fire service the fact that running out of air is one of the key contributors, and we would submit probably the single key contributing factor in firefighters dying in structures. And there's a lot of reasons why. I mean, you hit it right on the nose when you were talking about the firefighter who said, hey, I can get more work done. Well, that's a concern of all firefighters. We're given a task. We want to get in and do it. We don't want another crew to take it over for us and not get our job done before we radio out to the chief. I think all those are good thoughts to have. We want to be aggressive. We want to get the task done. Here's where the problem is you have a certain amount of air in your bottle that allows you to get in and do that task. When you violate that amount of air for you or your crew, I don't care what the job is, you violate your emergency reserve because it's just imperative that you have to finish pulling those ceilings. I mean, never mind that you've got another crew coming in to relieve you who could do it. It's imperative that you're the only one on the fire ground that can get this particular task done. So you elect of your own volition to work through your emergency reserve and to violate your emergency reserve.
It's a sense of pride. False pride, but it's a sense of pride.
It is, yeah. And at times it's going to border on arrogance.
I'll be damned if I let those bastards from the other company finish up in this room. We've heard
that's
it.
Right. And it ought to be something that firefighters ought to stand up and take notice and say, look, we talk about being such a great brotherhood and sisterhood. Let's start acting the way we talk. Let's start making our convictions and our beliefs that we talk about so proudly be present on the fire ground as well. You violate your emergency reserve. You elect to, as the firefighter you were talking to says, hey, you know, I can get another 2 minutes of work done. Bravo for you. In that 2 minutes, you've gotten however much work done. It's towards the end of your bottle. You've already been working hard, so you're not going to get a whole lot of extra work done. Now you violated your emergency reserve, and now the unthinkable happens. And it ought to be thinkable. We ought to have read enough line of duty deaths now. It ought to be something that we're thinking about. Now you get lost. Don't tell me that you can't get lost, because we've already blown that duck out of the water. Firefighters get lost in structures. Now there's a structural collapse. If you're at all mentating or thinking at all, you know that structural collapse is happening a lot due to the building construction and the time temperature curve and on and on and on. Something goes wrong because you elected, because it was just imperative you do that work for the next minute or two. You've now eliminated that margin of safety that was designed specifically for you. Now you're out of options. Your option now is to hunker down. If you're in the collapse, you're just trying not to get burnt because you're falling into the fire. Now you've activated a writ. You've given them so little time to come and get you that you're looking towards being another one of those NIOSH reports.
Well, and you know, if we enjoy doing what we do so much, if we love being firefighters so much, there are certain things we can be doing so we can keep on enjoying it instead of cutting our lives short. We're cutting our firefighting career short. You know, another discussion with somebody else was, well, then why don't we just get higher capacity SCBAs? Get us a 4-hour, I think a couple of years ago somebody came out with a 4-hour system. And now what you run into is that on one side of the chart is how much work you can get done. The other side of the chart is how much air you have. But the third segment of that triangle is what your capacity is to keep working. And people sometimes say, well, why not go with 45-minute bottles? And my answer is, go with a 45-minute bottle, but act like it's a 30-minute bottle and follow the rule of air management, and now you've got that much more reserve in case things go to hell quickly. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Well, what my thoughts are, I think we'll hire you. Would you like to be a part of the team?
I have no time. You
that's
can't
exactly,
afford me.
That's exactly what was so successful in Seattle. We spent a lot of time. I'll tell you that we've talked to a lot of the manufacturers. A 30-minute bottle is on the way out. So you know, we've talked to the manufacturers who are speaking to us pretty honestly, and the 30-minute bottle as a staple of the fire department is on the way out. So if you're thinking about buying new bottles, if you're in that process either through grants or just because you need to upgrade your stuff, we would seriously recommend that you go to 45s. And here's what really worked well in Seattle. It helped us to get our program off the ground because we met the same resistance that you chief officers who are making the decisions that you're going to meet when you bring this to your firefighters. And it's a good conversation. There were two concerns. One was on behalf of the chiefs and the union members who were looking out for our safety. They were concerned about giving us heavier bottles and about putting us in there for too long. They didn't want the work cycles violated. They wanted a good, safe working environment for firefighters. And that's righteous stuff. I mean, that's what I would expect from the people who lead us. So that was a concern about going to 45s. On the other hand were the firefighters, and we want to get in and do our jobs. We don't want to be getting pulled out after 5 minutes. We need to have the time we need to do this. Both excellent items, both great things to talk about. And where we met in the middle and why it was so successful was the 45-minute bottle answered the majority of the questions and concerns that everybody had, with this caveat: Seattle implemented the rule of air management. So when we put those 45s on our back, here was the glorious thing when we did our training. We were able to tell them, number one, the department and the union has your back. Number two, we as firefighters are going to be able to be the same aggressive firefighters that we've always been, because the 45-minute bottle gives you every single bit of working air that you've ever had in your 30-minute bottle, including what you've always, the emergency reserve that we've all
and
been
using. And then some, right.
Yeah, it gives you that full amount plus an extra minute and a half, something like that. And it gives you your emergency reserve intact. So you can use all the air that you've always used before. You get that good work cycle, that good 18, 20-minute work cycle, whatever it is that you're used to doing, however you work with your bottle, and you get your emergency reserve intact. By switching over to the 45s, air management became a very easy thing to implement in Seattle, and it's working beautifully.
So we're going to see a standard of a 45-minute high-pressure, lightweight bottle? Is that...
That would be our prediction.
Okay,
that would be
cool.
Our prediction. And we're seeing it as we do our classes. I mean, obviously, we teaching all over the country. Certain parts of the country are more apt to have the 30s, but we're seeing an increasing amount of 45s. You get the stubbies. You don't have the thing hitting you in the back of the head.
Right.
The weight is negligible. And, boy, the benefits, we just can't say enough about them. And it's important. You got to realize, again, chief officers, you folks that are making the decisions, the NFPA 1404 standard is changing as of January 1, 2007. It's not maybe going to change or this is the way it
right.
could be. In January 2007, NFPA 1404 changes, and exiting before your low air warning alarm hits is mandated in there. Recognizing that when that bell hits, it's the use of that, and that it's an immediate action item. That's what the 1404 standard will say, and we ask whenever we teach our classes, are you going to be ready as a department to meet that standard?
Cyanide. Let's talk about that a little bit, and this ties into the cancer discussion as well, because I want to mention a couple of very dear friends of mine, Lee Strickland, fire chief of department, Manhasset-Lakeville Fire Department out on Long Island, of which I'm an alumni of that department. Lee, a dear friend of mine, long time, I guess, I'm a firefighter 34 years. Lee's got to be a firefighter at least as long as I am. Lee was diagnosed a couple months ago with cancer, died 10 days later. Jimmy Salvamini, another firefighter friend of mine, young guy, longtime firefighter, diagnosed with cancer. Louis Skeeta, another former chief of Manhasset-Lakeville, diagnosed with cancer, died. And I can mention many, many others. It's a big issue, but let's first talk about cyanide, because I suspect the cyanide and the smoke issue is going to tie right into our cancer discussion.
Hydrogen cyanide is a killer. It's one that we've not paid as close attention as we need to, and it's unfortunate because it's not like the data isn't out there for us to at least stand up and take notice. There were a couple of significant studies done on hydrogen cyanide on exposure to firefighters, both that survived and that did not survive the incidences. And you can get all these at the Cyanide Poisoning Treatment Coalition website.
We have a link for that. Right?
Yeah, there was a link on it on the last show. I can't strongly recommend enough that you get on there and take a look at some of the studies, because once you do, you no longer kind of fight the battle of is cyanide present in our fires or isn't it? The chances are overwhelmingly positive that you are going to have hydrogen cyanide at your fires. And for those of you that are still not masking up, for those of you that are still going into fires without your respiratory protection on or activated, you're not actually breathing air, you can pretty much guarantee that you're breathing in some elements of cyanide. The interesting thing about cyanide is that it affects people differently. Some folks can get a certain amount of it and be just fine. Other folks, a little bit of it, and they are automatically into the bizarre behavior, the not thinking right, or collapse. That's the problem. There was a study done in Paris, and you know, my hat's off. I'm not too apt to be praising Paris or France for very many things. This one we can. They did a study in 1988 to 1989, and they tested all the data of 109 firefighters. There's 66 of them made it, 43 of them had fatalities. And here were the results, and then I'll read you another one from Dallas, and you're going to see some similarities. The main things that came out of the study were that cyanide and carbon monoxide were both determinants of smoke inhalation-associated morbidity and mortality. They were present, and they caused people to get injured or died. The concentrations were directly related to death. The cyanide poisoning may have predominated over carbon monoxide poisoning, meaning it may have been the major factor, not just a minor one, compared to CO. And that the cyanide and carbon monoxide may have potentiated each other. They may have assisted each other, worked as a deadly tag team to kill these firefighters. Another one in Dallas County, same thing, 144 smoke inhalation patients. They were run through some of the same tests. 43 of those individuals were already dead, and they were able to get good data from it. At this fire, there were elevated concentrations. At these fires, there were elevated concentrations of hydrogen cyanide, very likely related to many of the deaths, and once again, that they potentiated each other, or they assisted each other. What they're finding, as they go through these fires and these studies, they're finding that firefighters who had these levels of cyanide generally didn't survive. You could have the high levels of carbon monoxide poisoning, and a lot of those died. You tack on the hydrogen cyanide, you have the elevated levels of cyanide in the blood, your firefighters don't go home. And that's the problem. Now, I don't know if at this point you want to talk about the hydroxycobalamin, the antidote, Billy, but I would at least like to spend a little bit of time talking about that.
Let's take a quick break. We'll talk about that. I know Bobby Halton's been very involved with that, fire engineering. As I mentioned in the updates in the news earlier in the show, researchers from the University of Cincinnati compiled data on 110,000 firefighters from 32 published studies. Investigators report that half of the studied cancers were associated with varied levels of increased risk. Specifically, here you go, gang. Just listen to this. If you listen to nothing else on this show, firefighters are twice as likely to develop testicular cancer and have higher rates of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, prostate cancer and multiple melanoma when compared to non-firefighters. So as an active firefighter, you have a 50% chance, or actually you're 100% greater chance, twice as likely to develop those cancers. You're listening to Firehouse.com radio at Firehouse.com. This is Through the Smoke. I'll be right back.
Welcome to the latest edition of Through the Smoke with Deputy Fire Chief Billy Goldfeder, addressing issues impacting all firefighters' safety, health, and morale.
We're back. This is Through the Smoke at radio at firehouse.com. I'm Billy Goldfeder, your host. I'm talking with Mike Galliano, who's talking to us about SCBA air, managing your air. We're going to talk about cancer and firefighters and the cyanide issue as we start to wind down this episode of Through the Smoke. Mike, a dear friend of mine and many of ours, is the editor of Fire Engineering Magazine, Bobby Halton, who is another man on a mission focused on the issue of the cyanide problem and smoke and the issues of cancer and firefighting. Why don't you talk a little about those studies that you were starting to talk about before we took the break?
Well, we were talking about the hydrogen cyanide, and we were talking about the fact that it causes a breakdown at the cellular level in being able to have oxygen. One of the things that does, it affects your organs, and in particular it affects your brain, and it makes you start to make bad decisions, decisions that in a normal situation you wouldn't make. And one of the things that can cause, as well as just running out of air in general, is exposure to smoke. And we know full well, at least we should know, the smoke's a nasty, toxic, poisonous mess nowadays. With all the plastics that are burning, with all the synthetics that are out there, if you're not skookum enough as a chief officer, a fire officer, a firefighter, to know that when you inhale the smoke of today, you're inhaling known carcinogenic products, probably best that you find another line of work, because that's exactly what you're doing.
Well, I tell them, this is not your father's smoke. And what happens is, you'll see an old-timer with 30 or 40 years on running around without a mask breathing this stuff. And then so you'll see a rookie going, well, if he's breathing, I'm okay. Well, the old-timer's carrying on old traditions of breathing wood smoke and some of the non-toxic, not as toxic stuff. But today, look in your own home. Look at the fires you're going to. Almost nothing is natural. It's almost all man-made, and that's made of chemicals, and they off-gas poisons. It's really that simple, isn't it, Mike?
It really is, and it continues to amaze me that the blinders are still on in regards to whether or not we can be committed to interior operations and not be on air. I understand it's something that we've been doing for a long time, and those traditions are difficult to break. We just have to wise up as firefighters. Once again, we got to make our firefighters our number one priority on the fire ground. And there's varying statistics. I don't know if any of the listeners have had a chance to listen to "You Need It Like a Hole in the Head," the video presentation by the late Mark Noble.
I'll put a link to that on there, because that's a great presentation.
Oh, it really is, and once again, our frustration level just centers around the facts are so obvious. I mean, Mark did a lot of research as he was dying from his brain cancer, and the studies vary. There's going to be more studies. I guarantee you, if you continue in current air practices where you're routinely submitting yourself to smoke, both as the fire is going, during the fire, and afterwards, an overhaul, if you continue to submit yourself to that, you're going to be part of a study. You or members of your crew are going to be part of a cancer study. We're seeing elevated levels of every cancer you can name. Mark put some stuff out on his DVD, which I thought was excellent. He had brain cancer at 3.5 times a greater risk. If you got 10 to 19 years, I think it's 2.5, and then after 10 to 19 years, it bumps to 3.5. Leukemia, 3 times. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, 2 times. Multiple melanoma, 2.25 times. Bladder cancer, 3 times greater risk. Kidney cancer, 4. On and on and on. You name the cancer, firefighters are at least 100% more likely than the average person out there to come down with these cancers. Now, that ought to be bad enough. That ought to be enough to hear that and to know that for the people that are making the decisions to say, as difficult as this may be, we're no longer going to screw around with our air. We're going to do what's right, and we're going to give our folks the best opportunity possible not to be exposed routinely to the product's combustion. If that doesn't do it, how about this? Most firefighters, I think we want to do our job. Most of us want to be firefighters for our entire careers. Most of us
exactly.
are looking around for something else to do. This is what we love to do. We love to get in there and kick butt and take names. This is what we want to do. Listen to Jeff Kuhl on the program you just heard, where he I was just saddened to hear him say, we feel like we're broken firefighters. In Mark's DVD, he talks about the fact that he couldn't ride the rigs anymore, and you can just hear it in his voice how much he wanted to be on there. You want to keep fighting fire. You want to keep being on the apparatus, on the rigs, fighting fire. Do the stuff that will keep you there. Here's the second part. The second part is much more hideous. With these cancers being present at elevated levels across the country, I think firefighters somewhat get in the lulled sense of mentality, because most of us have good health care, or at least we have some health care. Most of us, when we get hurt, there's at least some degree that we're going to be taken care of. You start looking at these cancers for which you as a firefighter exposing yourself to the smoke have way elevated levels of getting. There's going to be, for most of you, no help. There's nobody's going to step in from the city and say, you know what, you stood up for the citizens. We just had our annual breakfast and we talked about how much we love firefighters. We're going to take care of you and your family in regard.
Yeah,
to
they're
that.
Full of crap. Yeah, full of crap. I've seen more and more and more studies, not studies, letters and comments and articles where the city says, all right, it's workers' comp and that's about it. That's all we can do for you. And then while you're suffering, they'll fire your ass. I mean, that's happened too, and don't think they're going to be there for you. And I hate to jump in on this, but this is something very near and dear to me, that there are some departments that will take care of you, but there are many departments, you need to look and see what your benefits are, see what protections you have, because don't be shocked if you come down with something and they say, well, you've got hospitalization, that's about it, and that's all we're going to do. What about your income? Who's going to take care of your family? You know, firefighters, you look inside your helmet, you got your kids' names, your wife's name, in your wallet, you got pictures of them, on your desk you got stuff. I mean, if you walk in my office, all you see is two kinds of pictures, stuff that's on fire and my family members. Well, if you care that much about them, why would you want to do this to them? So between hurting your family and not being able to go fires again, why wouldn't you wear your SCBA and manage your air?
Yeah, it staggers the mind at times that we don't look at the data and just say, this is what we have to do. Let me give you the stuff that we are trying to get passed through the legislature is called presumptive legislation. And, in a nutshell, it just presumes that you were a firefighter. Obviously, you've been exposed to all these things. It presumes that the cancer was job-related. That at least is...
Are you doing this in Seattle, or are you trying to do this? Because nationally, it doesn't exist. It does exist in certain states. Certain states have the presumption.
Right, and you'll have to check the various states
for
whether you have presumptive legislation or not. I know that the various organizations that are helping us with rules and regulations are trying to get it in all the states. And I can tell you what has happened in Washington just as an example. And I think it's a fairly decent example of how the politicians work. Now, we do have some presumptive legislation in place, thankfully. When they started to get the presumptive legislation, what was submitted was that the various forms of cancer for which there are elevated levels would be part of it. And that was breast cancer, CNS cancer, digestive cancer, lymphatic cancer, bone cancer, skin cancer, all these different ones that can be demonstrated we have a higher incidence
right.
than the normal public. By the time they got done with it, by the time it went through all the rigmarole and the monkeying around and the bean counters had their say, they narrowed all those down to 7 specific forms of cancer for which you would be covered. That was bladder cancer, brain cancer, kidney cancer, leukemia, malignant melanoma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and ureter cancer. That's
it. Ties right into that study they just came out with from the University of Cincinnati. It's almost the same thing.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's all you're covered for. We just went through a deal in Seattle with one of our beloved brothers with colon cancer. Young guy, died from the colon cancer. Zero. There's no coverage. It's non-work related,
right.
according to them. There's no coverage. And here's the other thing that they do. They'll throw these specific individual cancers in. They'll give you 1 or 2 or 3 in the presumptive legislation. And if you read the fine print, what they'll also do is they'll tie it to how many years you've been a firefighter, and they'll put a cap on it. So, for example, in Washington, I might get brain cancer when I retire 15 years from now, whatever it is. Because I'll have been in the fire department at that time, 30 years, I've gone well beyond where they're going to cap how long that cancer has to show itself. If I retire after 30 years in the fire service, I've got 5 years to show cancer. If I don't show it after 5 years, I'm screwed.
It's non-job related,
non-duty related. Obviously, they link it to smoking. They have things in there where they can get you as far as what type of air practices you're using when we do.
I happen to agree with the smoking one. I don't think there is an obligation to provide a presumption to a firefighter that smokes, but that's my own personal opinion. However, if you've got a firefighter who's relatively healthy, who's a non-smoker, they should be protected. And areas are starting to work on it, and they're moving forward with it, but, it's still, and I'm sure you agree with me, you urge every firefighter, now is the time to look at your coverages, now is the time to talk about it. If you're a volunteer firefighter, talk with your volunteer association to see what your community's providing you with as far as protection. I mean, you're working for free, for God's sake, so they ought to give you something. And for career firefighters, you're risking your lives as well. Make sure you know what coverage you have.
Yeah, we want people to at least understand the game they're playing. If like we said from the beginning, if it's absolutely 100% certain that you're going to go in there and do that extra 2 minutes of work and burn through your emergency reserve, if you're going to routinely go in, not covered, not breathing air,
right?
The fire hasn't got started yet, it's only light or moderate smoke,
right.
Never mind the fact that all the deadly stuff is right there with you. All the carcinogens have been off-gassing and burning long before you see the fire, long before it's like, okay, now it's time to mask up.
Yeah, it doesn't have to look nasty to be nasty. I mean,
that's exactly right, and same thing with overhaul. You know, we talked a little bit about overhaul. The studies are coming more and more now that you're at just as much risk or more from the products of carcinogenic products or things that are going to screw you up respiratorily or in regards to cancer during overhaul. If you're going to continue to do that stuff, either allowing your firefighters to doing it or making that decision as an individual, at least know the game you're playing. The results are horrifying. At least know that that's what you're exposing your firefighters to. Good air management techniques, good air management policy
that helps
will eliminate
that problem. Sure.
Not everything, but it will eliminate the majority of the things that are putting us routinely in harm's way.
Let's talk about the buddy system. What's that all about?
Well, it's part of a comprehensive air management program. You got to attack air management, I think, from every level. And the first part in Seattle, you know, we talk very hardly. We just have an air management culture, and you don't go to a drill now in Seattle where air management's not discussed. It's just part of, just like you would. You got to get a water supply. You got to get the building vented. We got to do a search. There has to be accountability, incident command. Air management now is just a part of how we do business in Seattle, and we talk about it from the ground up. As we were doing our studies, we were going through the NIOSH reports, and we just kept coming across time and again things that were getting firefighters in trouble inside of structures. And it was stuff that could be taken care of on the outside. You know, there's not a lot we can do sometimes about remodels or bad construction, not knowing that there's a pony wall in the case of the Pang fire,
right,
that collapsed and dropped our brothers in there. There are things that we don't know about or we can't do anything about. These were things that we could. And we just kept seeing time and time again firefighters without radios, not on the right channel. They
right.
were calling for help or saying there was a problem and the transmissions weren't getting out. Air was constantly a problem. Not having the right equipment for the job. You know, you're sent in to pull ceilings and you went in there with a buck knife and an axe.
Sure.
That's great. You know, get back out to the rig and get the tools that you need. So what we tried to do is we tried to come up with something that would address these things that we were seeing constantly as part of the problem of putting people
okay.
in at risk or getting lost. And we came up, we call it a ready check. So all it is a buddy check. It's right before you go in. Take, you know, as you get good at it, 5 to 10 seconds just to do a quick check of your buddies. And we called it a ready check because it was easy. You're either ready or you're not. It's not, you know, some big long acronym that nobody can remember what you're talking about. You know, Joe was a dumb truckie, and you have to feel, okay, Jay was for, you know what I mean? Just real easy. Ready check. Are you ready or are you not?
Right.
The R is for radio. Do you have it? Is it turned on, and are you on the right channel? You take care of that, you've eliminated a lot of the problems right off the bat. The E is for equipment. Do you have the right equipment for the job you've been assigned? If you don't, get the right equipment. A is for air. You know what your air is. You have enough for the task. And D is duties. Do you know what your assignment is? Do you know who you're reporting to, and do you know what your assignment is, and can you do it? If you can answer yes to all those things, if as a team leader or part of a crew, you can look at your members and say, we have radios and they're on, we have the appropriate equipment, we have the appropriate air, and we know what our assignment is, you eliminate the majority of problems that are coming on the interior that are getting people lost, trapped, not getting their job done. If you can say yes, which is the last part of why in the ready check, you're ready to go. If you can't say yes, stop and fix the problem.
That's excellent. You know, every time we do this show, we try and give the listeners a tool. And here's another tool. You learned how to manage your air this week and then last episode, too. And here's another tool for you. Your ready check. You and your partner, you get ready to go inside. You've already done your primary air check, as we talked about last week. But then you're going to do your check your radio. What channel are you on? We're on Bravo Charlie 2. Okay, good, because the new 800 digital radios require you to figure out which of the 900 channels you're on, which is a whole other subject of discussion. But radio, making sure we're on the right channel. Equipment, you got your stuff. Air, what's your reading? How much you got? Do we know what duties we're going to perform for that D? We're going to the second floor to search. Yep, we got all those. Yes, it's time to go. That's great, the ready check. Absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, you're either ready or you're not. And that's air management on the front end before you head into the building. There's a lot of things that we can do once we're in there to do better at air, just following the rule, air management being the key one. But this is stuff that you can do on the front end to eliminate a lot of the problems.
Another tool for your toolbox of thinking about getting home safely after that run. And you are we have a copy, or actually we have a link to Seattle's website, and that will provide you with Seattle Fire Department's policy and all the stuff that Mike has been talking to us about. ManageYourAir.com, that's their website, and Mike is speaking on behalf today of Phil Jose, Casey Phillips, Steve Bornoco, and what they do is absolutely fantastic. You guys are making a big difference. Mike, a couple seconds, final thoughts from you to our listeners.
Well, I would just encourage you, take your air seriously. ManageYourAir.com is our website. Everything on there is free. You get all of our articles. If you want to hear about ready checks, if you want to go through the radio report system that we've developed, any of the stuff that has to do with air management, links to other sites, it's all there. That's free. One other thing that I would strongly, strongly encourage firefighters to do is get involved in the cyanide antidote that we're trying to get into the United States. It's called hydroxycobalamin. If you go to the Cyanide Poisoning Treatment Coalition website, France is using this, and they're using it with great success. And we obviously don't have time to go into it in detail, but we want to get that antidote put into the United States. It's a simple thing that can be introduced to firefighters pre-hospital. It can happen right on the fire ground by medics. Pre-hospital, it has no side effects, unlike the current cyanide kits, which, if you're not exposed to cyanide, it can depress your system and make what's already a bad situation worse. It can kill you right there. This is a B12 derivative. It's harmless to you. I mean, the worst thing it's going to do is make your pee red. But it can be introduced to you pre-hospital, and they're having great results with it.
What's stopping us? I know, as I mentioned earlier, Bobby Halton's a big champion of this, as you are. What's taking so long? Why aren't we doing it?
Well, it all has to do with testing. They want to run it through on live people and make sure that it's okay to introduce. They can tell you it's been being used with great success in France. In fact, they just had an incident which you can read about on the coalition's website, or the smoke insert that we talked about last time. It has that actual incident. The cyanide kits that we're carrying are so risky because of what we're already in a depressed state as far as our hemoglobin and our oxygen carrying capability. The current kits, the Lilly kit and the Taylor kit, they depress that ability even more, so medics are hesitant to use them. In fact, the recommendation is that they not be used in the pre-hospital environment. This is something that it's being used out in Europe. It's being used with great success, and we just have to make sure that we let our government and our officials know we need this now. We need it. We need our medics to be able to give this to us now. And in particular, let me close with this. We always say in our programs, chief officers, I hope you're not in this boat, but what is happening across the country is chief officers and the people who make the decisions are hoping that nothing goes wrong. They're hoping that the collapse doesn't happen. They're hoping that we don't run out of air. Listen, hope is okay, but hope is not a plan. It's not a plan. And if that's what you're doing, you're just hoping that you're not going to be another Providence, Rhode Island, where firefighters were exposed, where a firefighter had a heart attack, maybe, probably due to the hydrogen cyanide. You're not going to be, not going to have a Brett Tarver incident. You're not going to have that collapse. Hope is not a plan. And what we've demonstrated in our classes across the country, and I hope this answers one of the major concerns for firefighters, is we can put you into a very intense environment, the stuff that you go to on a routine basis, with a little bit of training in air management techniques, you can be as aggressive as you've always been. We hear that all the time. We're never going to do air management because we're too aggressive. And we call BS. We have demonstrated clearly in our drills and in Seattle Fire, I'll stack up Seattle Fire Department against any department in the country for aggressive interior operations. We've demonstrated quite clearly that you can be as aggressive as you've ever been, and in some respects, with good situational awareness, better, and you can do it safely and come home, both from the tour and 20, 30 years from now without all these cancers and diseases that were going on.
Right, what happens is with that, you get away with something once and you keep getting away with it, so we'll be okay. Low staffing, poor air management, not enough water, no water on the fire. And every one of us listening to the show, every one of you listening to the show has been on runs where you're like on your way back to quarters and you're like, well, we got away with that, but one of these days. And that's what Mike's talking about, is avoiding that one of these days. Well, we want to thank you, Mike, and certainly Jeff Kuhl for his outstanding interview. And also, a final thought, and thanks to Kurt Weldon. Kurt, we know you lost in your election, and for whatever reasons, you didn't get the support you needed. But rest assured that the fire service is a changed service to the better due to the efforts and work of Kurt Weldon supporting us at the congressional level. It's important that we look to make sure that the up-and-coming politicians learn from Kurt Weldon in his support of area firefighters. You're listening to Through the Smoke, radio at firehouse.com. I'm your host, Billy Goldfeder. I'll see you soon.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.